Welcome to the Before Midnight podcast, coming to you from the N Plus One studios overlooking beautiful downtown Frankfurt. In this podcast, we explore the world of endurance multisport. If it has to do with swimming, biking, running, or any combination of the three, we're there and we'll talk about it. This week, we're revisiting the topic about how to plan a race season, and we're going to actually look at a couple and see what it looks like. I'm your host, Linda Word, along with my co-host, Brian Schenkenfelder. How are you doing today, Brian?
I'm doing amazing, fantastic, woo-hoo, phenomenal. I gotta bring that back.
Word again. And you know what? I've started using that word.
Nice. It's a good word.
I haven't put it into any of my writing. I write an article for the local paper, and it has not slipped into there, but it has slipped into other places.
It's such a good word because it just rolls off the tongue and just sounds, people like hear it and go, yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
That is, I think you're a wackadoodle. I don't know.
No, it's great.
So what have you been into this week?
The grind, man. The grind.
Yeah. Or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, we're kind of recording in the evening, so it's kind of cool in the winter. I get a view of downtown Frankfurt.
It is absolutely beautiful. You guys have got the best view that I have ever, of this area. I mean, some of those buildings are kind of ugly during the daytime, but dang, they look actually pretty nice at night.
Everything looks better at night.
Yeah.
Generally.
Yes.
But the reason we're recording at night is because I had jury duty again.
Woohoo! But you're here, so.
Yes, I did not actually have to participate this time. We sat around for a couple hours, like it always is. About 10:15, they come in and tell us that there had been a motion filed, and that might be good for us. I'm like, okay.
Okay.
It'll be another half hour, 45 minutes. So about 11 o'clock, we roll into the courtroom, and there was no attorneys, no defendant there. And we're like, okay, this is weird. Because I was like, the motion, if it was going to be good for us, we're like, they settled somehow. It was a criminal trial, so I assume the defendant probably pled to something.
Yeah. Let's cut my losses here, yeah.
We get in there, and they go through the roll call, and the new jurors, they have to be kind of, sorry, sworn in, basically. They have to qualify themselves.
Okay.
Like, are they a U.S. citizen? Have they ever been convicted of a crime type stuff? And if they haven't, then they can serve as jurors.
Okay.
And they did that, and then he tells us about the greatness of the history of being a juror. Which was, it's always interesting. He's a judge. He's the same judge we had last time, and he's an interesting guy. He's pretty good. He keeps things moving. He's like, sometimes they usually settle a couple weeks before. They'll usually plea a couple weeks before. But then sometimes you get to the day before, and when you go into a trial, it can sharpen your mind. And this gentleman decided to
got a little sharper there.
Got a little sharper and decided to plea. So I didn't even get through the WADAV process. I didn't get to go through any of that stuff.
So they didn't ask you any questions.
Selection process or anything.
So I have a weird question. Well, can dual citizens serve on juries? I wonder.
If you're a U.S. citizen, you have to be a U.S. citizen, as long as you're a U.S. citizen.
So if you're a dual citizen with, I don't know, United States and another country,
you'd be
able to. Okay.
Because you're a U.S. citizen, as long as you're a U.S. citizen.
Yeah.
And you haven't committed a crime that's over a year in jail or something like that.
Okay. It just occurred to me actually today, I realized, oh wow, 2020's coming up. That will be the 50th anniversary of my family's landing in this country. And it's like, huh, yeah, I probably should. I mean, I can become a dual with Australia. I just haven't done it yet.
I guess if you're planning on fleeing the country, that might want to think about getting that.
Well, I mean, it's something that I had to give up, and that kind of stunk at the time. I didn't have the option of becoming a dual citizen when I became a citizen. So I've thought about it. I have all the paperwork, and I basically got to say, sometime in the next 8 years, I might go back and live there for more than 2 years or something, you know. And so, sure, anything can happen. Anything else fun happened this week?
Yeah, it was actually a very busy weekend, full of excitement and adventure. Saturday was volleyball. We had two games.
That's right.
Six matches. We lost all six matches.
Ooh, sorry.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I don't stack my team up with all my servers first, like some other teams do. Kind of trying to get everybody to play, and that comes back and bites me sometimes, because we lost some close games. But I was excited. We're getting our hands on the ball. We returned some. We didn't return everything, but we got the ball up in the air a couple times. And that's exciting because now they're at least moving and going for the ball. The ball's just not hitting the ground. With them looking at it. We're actually probably the best team at that so far. It was just one of those days where, like, the other team, you know, they might have some weak servers. And dang it if they didn't get their servers over. Like, three or four servers over in a row. And it's like, you know, or, like, they'll mishit it and it still goes over the net. And it's like everything they bumped, what came right back over. So it was like whenever we did get a serve over and they actually made contact with it, it came back over. It was just like one of those days where everything, nothing goes right. And, like, yeah, it's...
Well, it went right for them.
Went right for the team. It's just what it is. You can't control the events that are going to happen in a game day. All you can control is the process. And the process is working. We're getting better at serving. We're getting better at returning. It just hasn't shown up in results in the game. And some of that's because of how I set things up, trying to bracket some of the weaker players. I'm trying to make sure everybody gets equal playing time and stuff. And it's...
I mean, that's important. You know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you got to do that.
I do things a little bit different. Like I said, it's more of a process, and we'll get better as the year goes on.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else did I have this weekend? I also got to go up to Cincinnati on Sunday.
That's right.
For my niece's baptism. I'm now a godfather. Just hilarious. I'm going into Cincinnati. Godfather rolls into Cincinnati.
I thought you were godfather for your nephew, too. Okay.
No, just the niece.
Just the niece. Okay.
And we're sitting there, and it's Catholic, so we're sitting in the Mass, and it was hilarious. My nephew, the priest gets done with his homily. As soon as he finishes, he goes, "Yay!" Class!
That's awesome. I hope the priest had a sense of humor.
Well, he just ignored it. A bunch of us chuckled.
The rest of you are laughing.
And then we get to the baptism, and my niece kind of woke up and was hungry.
Oh, whoops,
and
bad timing.
So, yeah, bad timing. She just completely cried the whole time.
Oh, well.
And of course, it was a 10, 15-minute process. There's a lot of crying.
Yeah, yeah. Baptisms are very sweet. I'm Episcopalian, so it's very similar to what you all do. And I've seen a lot of priest glasses take a hike and get flown, and lots of beards get grabbed.
Pretty fun. So yeah, it was a busy weekend. Like I said, I had volleyball on Saturday, football Saturday afternoon. I was up Cincinnati all Sunday, so I didn't really get a chance to work out this week. A little disappointing.
Yeah, because the weather was actually pretty nice. I was going to bike yesterday. But
I wasn't trying to bring the weather up.
Oh, I forgot.
One of these days, we will make it through a podcast without talking about
the
weather.
Well, that's why I didn't bike yesterday. So I ended up on the trainer just because it was warm. But I volunteered at a race, setting up a race, and because I had a back-to-back stuff on Sunday, too. And I got so cold just out in these fields. It was out where the soccer games are. And I just got chilled to the bone helping set up. And I was like, I am not getting on my bike. There's just no way. So I got on the trainer for a little while, and that stunk. So I won't do that again.
Yes, I ended up getting on the trainer Saturday night for a little bit while I watched football.
Did you get on the rollers?
Yes.
And watched football and didn't die? That's pretty impressive. Getting better at those things.
Yes, it was actually a bit of a challenge when I started because the TV wasn't directly in front of me, so I had to kind of look to the left I'm riding on it. And yeah, I almost crashed a few times.
Those of you, I don't know, when did you get those?
Last year.
Last year something. Okay.
It's for last winter.
That's right.
It's rollers are very interesting. They're very narrow. And
yeah,
I'm
like tried
all...
once and I'm like, no, not without helmet and like full padding. I will die on those things.
It's a little bit easier because I've been riding with my flat pedals. So I can always, it's much easier to get off with flat pedals than it is when you're clipped in.
I wonder what it'd be like to do, like, my mountain bike is light enough on rollers.
It would work.
I don't know. I'm just thinking
the
pedals. The
probably would be not be ideal.
Yeah. I was just thinking the pedals are flat.
And I've done it clipped in. There's just a little more danger involved in clipped in.
You think? Yeah.
Not a ton.
Yeah, go look on YouTube videos.
No, I actually, like, came off them the other day. And you can actually ride off them. It's not that hard.
Ride off of the rollers.
Yeah. And just start riding on. I mean, obviously I couldn't do it in my living room. I came off them and just rolled for a few seconds until I hit the brakes. But it would be pretty easy to roll off them and just ride off. That's what a lot of times they'll do in the indoor racing.
Oh, okay.
Of course, those guys are good. They can, like, come up to a track stand on the roller if they need to.
Yeah.
Ride. Well. And those guys are phenomenal. Balance guys, the track guys.
So it's like, are they, like, getting up their speed on the rollers and then...
Just warming up pre-race.
Okay.
Because they all have fairly short races, so they have to pre-warm up for the...
Okay.
They'll use the rollers for warming.
Because
you can just ride in.
I've never watched one of those indoor races. I need to do that sometime.
Yeah, those are pretty wild. Because they're all single speed. Those guys are massive legs.
I thought the guys that are doing Tour de France had big legs. Jeez.
Yeah, these guys are just basically sprinters.
Sprinters, yeah. Huh.
Ride indoors.
They don't have to worry about the weather.
Correct.
Has to come up. It has to come up. I guess last week we got the assorted plagues at work. That was a lot of fun. That's the joys of working with small children and all of their stuff. Ugh, my God.
The plague came through.
Oh, my God, did I ever. And I get the substitutes, and we don't have very many substitutes. Let's see, twice I had to get out of the pool, like, very, very quickly last week and leave master's practice. I leave my phone at the end of the lane so that I can, and my watch vibrates when I get text messages. So I know when I get to the end of the lane, check the phone. Sure enough, you know, Linda, how fast can you get me a sub? So-and-so woke up with pink eye. Oh, great. Can you get me a sub? So-and-so is throwing up. Oh, great. So that was my week. But the only thing I caught, you know, I ended up having to work kind of double shifts on Tuesday. And on Wednesday morning, I woke up and I'm like, my friend was like, your eye looks really red. I said, oh, it's fine. You know, running group. I was like, you know, I break blood vessels in my eyes. It's happened. So I figured that's what it is. And I went home and I was like, oh, wait, nope, guess not. Hey, I'm off work today.
Gee, little pink eye, I guess.
Yeah, little pink eye. But I felt great, so I got to kind of get some stuff done. And
yeah, pink eye really is not all that debilitating. It's just you can't really
go there.
A lot of
people get very sick, though, because it goes along with having a cold a lot of times. I had a little bitty sore throat. That was it. And whatever. Ended up with pink eye. Antibiotic drops for 24 hours, and then you can go back to work. Yeah. So that's what I did.
No, we've been very lucky in our household on the sickness. Alex got a little bug Saturday night, which allowed me or forced me to go solo to Cincinnati on Sunday for the baptism. So that was a little disappointing. But
He had
a little bit of a stomach bug, but he was fine the next day.
Yeah, I mean, he was lucky because that bug hit some kids super hard. So that
was
good.
And his kids in his class, too, got hit.
Yeah, yeah. I think two or three in his class. So.
I'm actually surprised he didn't spread it to our household. We have the plague ourselves.
Avoid
the last
the
thing I need. It's like jury duty.
Jury duty with the plague. Awesome. Yeah, they missed out on the flu shot.
Two of the seven signs of the apocalypse. The plague and jury duty.
Landing at your house. Awesome. Well, you've decorated a little for Christmas. Our Christmas is already down, thank you to the kittens.
Yes.
We hung the Christmas tree from the ceiling. And I heard all this commotion one night, and I was like, oh, it's just the kittens in the tree, and I didn't bother getting up. My daughter did. She came out, and one of the kittens was, like, trying to hang herself in the lights. She was like, okay, no more tree. So the tree is gone. We're going to be true Episcopalians, and we'll put it up on Christmas Eve, and that's
okay.
It. And then it'll come down.
We don't do a ton here. We'll put up a Christmas tree, but since we live fairly remotely from the rest of the population... There's no sense in putting up trees or lights on the house or anything like that. What we do is we put lights up on the back of our house in the shape of a tree. And everybody's like, oh, you light up that Christmas. Because you can see it from downtown. Everybody's like, oh,
it's
you.
It's awesome. Yeah. I love looking up and seeing that tree.
It's like, man, I want to go up and see your tree. It's like, no, it looks better from downtown. Because it's not a tree. It's just hanging in the shape of a tree.
Not a tree. Do you do a star, too? Have you done a star? Or is it always the tree?
Jenny puts up like a spotlight on top to make it look like a star.
No, I thought like the whole shape was a star. Before.
No, it's a shape
no,
of a tree.
It's always been a tree. Okay, yes. Okay. So I'm just thinking of, you know, before I knew you all, yeah. I want to say that I must be thinking of the star up at Roanoke or something. I know somewhere there's a huge star up
on
a hill.
Yeah, on one of the other hillsides.
Yeah, somebody else in Frankfurt up on a hillside's got either a tree or a star or something.
It's a star, yeah.
Is it a star? Okay.
No, we have the tree that everybody wants to see. It's like, yeah, no, it looks better from downtown. It doesn't look very good from up here. It's not a tree.
Is this not a tree? It's a bunch of lights. It looks really good, though. It's nice to have. Thank you for doing that. I look forward to seeing it. I hate it when it comes down, but it's like, oh, well. Yeah, the kittens are doing well, aside from tearing down our Christmas. They're going outside since they've done that. I'm like, okay, y'all are big enough to go outside and fend for yourselves. And they have encountered the chicken. That was this morning. That was funny as heck. Poor kitten had no idea what to do with the chicken. I wasn't going to save the kitten either because I wanted to see what happened, but I was kind of afraid the chicken was going to peck him. So I was like, I'll save you.
You may not have chickens in a couple weeks. Yeah. Cats
I'll tell you what, the dog is getting fed up because they play with his tail in the middle of the night.
And okay.
He's very patient, but you'll hear this. And they continue to play with his tail.
Well, yeah, because something to play with, it moves.
Guys, you know,
something to attack.
The dog is 107 pounds. You know, you're smaller than his head and you're going to mess with him, but
he's not going to catch him.
Yeah, I don't know. He might.
Those cats are fast.
They are. But I've seen Hutch will move if he has to. Yeah. So, but yeah, entertainment in the home. It's a great time.
Pets are good that way.
Pets are good that way. Yeah, we have too many. You just have cats and raccoons and fish. And what kind of reptile do you have?
A gecko.
A gecko. That's right.
If you know anybody who needs a gecko, we'll be happy to give you that and his cage, everything you need for a gecko to survive.
No, I'm good, thanks. No.
That's a plea to anybody who's listening to this.
You need to give him to the school. It's a classroom pet.
Maybe. Whose classroom pet would?
I don't know. The first grade over in the other building was looking for a classroom pet. They like voted on one and stuff. You should have just like gotten in on that.
The problem
I didn't even
is
think
it's a
about
gecko
it.
That only comes out at night.
It's a very useless pet, I hate to tell you.
Well, if you're a night owl, it's great.
Yeah, kids aren't in school at night.
Exactly.
So that doesn't work.
It doesn't
very
work
well.
Very well.
Yeah. That always drove me crazy with classroom pets when people get like hamsters and gerbils.
Same thing, night owls.
They're nocturnal. Get a guinea pig. They're the only one that's awake during the day. Guinea pigs will even talk to you.
Or rabbits.
I guess they're awake. But they don't do much except poop.
You get a pet duck.
They make a mess. Oh my god.
All animals make a mess.
Yeah, no, but they really make a mess.
You get a goat.
Oh my god. What is wrong with you? Why would you get a goat as a classroom pet?
They end up on top of all your tables and try to climb everything.
It's been a long day for you, hasn't it? Oh my.
Goats are such dumb animals. You get a pygmy goat, they're smaller. That's what we had. They're
I had
dumb
one too.
Too.
Yeah.
They're all dumb. Goats are dumb animals.
Yes, goats are dumb. Sheep are stupider though. Holy cow. We had sheep. They don't know how to back up. So we had two ewes. That was always fun. Hey, you. Anyway. And we had square fence and one got in between the fence and the building and turned her head and got her head caught in the fence. And then the other ewe went the other way and had her head caught the other way. And neither one could get out.
Well, yeah.
Because they don't back up.
Yeah.
So I had to cut my fence and then pull these 150-pound animals by the fur backwards because they weren't going to willingly go backwards.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. It was ridiculous. The ram that we had ended up getting killed by my horses because he kept on butting them to get their food. And, they finally one day was like, no, you're done. And he was. So that was that.
No, we had goats and I... The most memorable thing about the goats would be you'd put your food down, you'd put a bale of hay down, and they would jump on top of the hay, eat it, and then pee and poop on their hay while they were eating it.
Correct.
Like, you idiots. Like, how do you eat that? That's disgusting.
Well, like ponies, you know, the horses, you get them a roll bale, they pull out all the hay, and they sleep in it, and they poop in it, and they pee in it, so they waste half of it. It's just their bed.
The goats don't do that. They don't lay in it. They just stand on it, eat it, and poop on it. And then
at the same time?
Off. Yes. While they are standing on it, they're pooping and peeing on what they're eating.
That's kind of gross.
Yeah, it's disgusting animals. Because they'll lay down by the cells somewhere else. They don't get it out for that. They're just pooping and peeing.
The one thing about horses, especially male horses, they like cleaning stalls. I loved the good ones that would only poop and pee in one corner. So when you're cleaning stalls, it was like, oh, thank God. I've only got to do that one corner. You don't have to clean the whole thing. And then you have the mares that, like, walk around and crap. And walk llamas. Through it. And are llamas?
Llamas actually only use their bathroom in one spot. So if you have, like, a pen, they'll use a spot for the bathroom that's inside nice. The pen. Like, even a big area.
I mean, you can see, you know, in our horse farm where they go or where they have in the past. Because we're just down to the one pony now who wanders the yard.
See, I like llamas. I've always wanted to.
Okay.
Actually, what I wanted to do for a while was create like a llama packing company and go and do tours in eastern Kentucky on some of those trails, like do overnight and have like packed on the stuff with llamas.
You pack everything with llamas. Are you walking, like leading the llama?
Yeah, you lead the llamas and you do a hiking trail instead of everybody having to carry their stuff. The llamas would carry them. And you can get away with that. You can't take horses on a lot of the trails. But you can take llamas because they got pads. They don't have hooves.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yes.
Huh.
So they can actually be taken on trails because they won't tear them up. They don't tear like them a up? Horse or a donkey or something like that.
Interesting. I did not know that about llamas. That I could have swore they were hooved animals.
And not. They're easy to transport, too, because they cush. If you put them inside of a van, they'll sit down.
That's funny. Okay. I didn't know llamas could sit down.
No,
that
they
cracks
didn't.
Cracks me up.
Llamas are cool. They're cool animals.
Okay. Now, your family has always seemed to like llamas. I know your son likes llamas. I
well,
know Jenny likes
Fortnite.
It. Okay. Well, I don't know anything about that, but all right.
Yeah, but no, llamas are cool animals.
Okay. Interesting. Well, all right. Learn something new every day. Well, we'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Three Sport Endurance, formerly Small Batch Coaching. Full disclosure, Three Sport Endurance is us. We are both athletes and competitors ourselves in triathlon and running, so we understand the sport and we understand realistic lifestyles. We both do all kinds of stuff and still manage to train. We work with beginning 5K athletes to people that are doing Ironman and 100-mile endurance races. We work on achieving goals, but we also work on getting beyond the next PR, and we train athletes to be better, more confident athletes and better at the sport and be ready to, you know, to handle things that happen in races that you don't necessarily expect, like getting run over in a swim or monsoon rain during a marathon. All kinds of stuff can happen. So we work with people on how to handle that and just become a better competitor. So if you're looking for a coach, throw us an email at coach@threesportendurance.com or look us up online. All right, we're going to talk about Brian's season this year.
Yeah, you always get questions about how do you organize a season, how do you go about setting up your race schedule and training, and what do you do during various elements of the year. And we always talk in generic terms of like, well, this part would be like your base season. We'll describe what base season is. And then you'll kind of have your build or lead up to the race. And then you'll have your peaking your for the race. Then we'll talk about it. And then you probably have an off season. But what does that really look like? And I've been thinking about this for a while because it's the end of the year. I'm starting to think about my next year. And I realize that most people just don't really know what that kind of looks like. And so they kind of make it up based on, well, I need to have this, this, and this. And then when I'm done, I can start doing this all over again. But I want to take a look at it from a calendar year standpoint, from someone like myself who understands how to kind of plan a year. What does it look like for me? What would my year look like? What am I doing during various parts of the year? To give people an idea how you would go about scheduling a year, what would it look like? How would you go about planning a year for racing?
Now, when you're talking about this, does it depend? Does the same guidelines apply for if you're just a runner or if you are also a triathlete or you're just a triathlete, or does it depend on the distance of the races? Or
not really. I mean, from my standpoint, I'm looking at, okay, I'm an age group athlete who does endurance sports. What would a year look like for me if I were racing? Now, I do triathlon, so my schedule is going to be a little more different. I'm going to be much more summer focused than a runner who would either be probably spring or fall focused, because that's when the major races are in cooler temperatures, where triathlon is more of a summer sport. So my peak is going to be different than a runner because of when my races are. When I go about creating a year, the first thing I'm thinking is, okay, what is going to be my peak race? What are my important race of the year? What are my important races of the year? I'm an aging age group athlete. I'm 47. I'm not super old, but I'm well past 30, well past 40 at this point. And I'm not going to go and try to have a multi-peak season. I'm not going to try to have a big race in, say, June and then a big race in August, September. I might try to do that once, but it's very difficult to be able to do that year in and year out, to have that double peak. You can do it like once every few years. But for me, it's like, okay, I'm not going to do these double peaks anymore. Mm-hmm. They're silly. They just burn you out. The end of the year is an awful feeling. So I'm like, okay, I need to have one peak race a year, or at least one, a couple big peak races. And I usually try to center them right around the beginning of August. At the end of the summer, it happens to be a pretty good time because that's when age group nationals are for USAT. Mm-hmm. So that fits into be a pretty good time if I want to go do something like that. There's a couple local races in Louisville. They have the Derby City Trifecta. I've done that as my peak race a few times. It's in August. There's the Bowling Green race in August. Mm-hmm. So I'll try to pack up two or three races together, and that's going to be I'm going to go for that as my peak fitness for the year. And so I base my whole year around being ready in August. So what does that look like? Let's start with I've raced in August. What happens after that? And we'll work our way back around to the next August.
Okay.
Is a kind of a way to look at it. Because once I've reached that August, September, early September, you know, I'll do my peak race in August. In September, I might race in September. So I might do some more races after that peak. And mostly, once I've peaked, it's really, I'm just trying to maintain fitness until then. Mm-hmm. I'll do my last race. Then I pretty much, in October, I shut down running. Because I start transitioning to my off season somewhere in September once I do my last race. I transition to my off season at that point in time. And the first thing I do is shut down running. I run once a week at that point, and it's about 30 minutes.
Why do you do that?
The biggest reason I do that is because running is hard on the body, and I want to recover from all the accumulative fatigue from running. It's the hardest sport on the body, and it's the one that you mostly should take some time off. Even for runners, take a month off. It's not going to kill you. Or at least cut back severely to running maybe once a week. Yeah, if you want to try to maintain, if you're a runner and you're trying to maintain some fitness once or twice a week, keep it 20, 30 minutes, that's it. Just really back it off. Give your body a chance to heal. Usually that time I usually pick up and do a lot of biking at that time too.
So it's nice bike season that time of year too.
That is, you know, it's for me it's awesome. I love September, October. It's always my favorite time every year. The weather's not too hot, which I don't have a problem with hot weather. I enjoy hot weather. Yes. But I'm coming off peak fitness, so I'm in great shape. So I can go out and ride hard. I can go out and have fun. There's no stress. Let's go out. Let's roll. Let's go out and ride. Let's go ride hard. Let's go do. We'll climb mountains. We'll try to do 5,000 feet of elevation change in 50 miles. Like
oh
we did
my
this
god!
Last year.
I hate those rides. I've been on some of those. Oh my god.
So
not in peak fitness. It's not nearly as much fun.
Yeah, it's probably hard to chase me in peak fitness. Because I'm having fun. I can ride fast. I can do whatever. That's some of my favorite time of the year.
Yeah.
Well, then we start rolling into November. We hit daylight savings time. And that's when I start shutting down my biking. At that point in time, it gets cold, it gets dark. You can't really get out and ride as much, so I begin to bike less. I'll take up mountain biking, and I might do mountain biking in September too. It just depends on the weather, what I feel like mm-hmm. that day. And I transition to mostly mountain biking over the winter. So, I mean, I'll shut down biking in November, December, probably January and February, and my biking will be very limited. I'll do some indoor trainer stuff just to kind of maintain my bike fitness to some extent, just the skills.
Yeah,
biking is a skill, and you have to maintain it. I jump on the rollers. It's great for bike handling, because if you don't ride straight, you're going to crash and die.
I still don't think I could. Yeah, I'm
and
not ready
for that. It is a challenge
to
like look to the left and right while you're on it.
Yeah, no.
So that's where my biking goes. And I'll start picking up my running over the winter. Just for me, that November, December, January is all mostly about weight management.
Yeah.
I stay active just so I don't put on 50 pounds.
Yeah, no kidding.
And so I'll start running more in the winter. It's not that I'm running a long distance. It's 30-minute sessions, maybe 3 or 4 times a week. And mostly on a treadmill because it's winter time, so it's easier on the body to run on a treadmill. or maybe go out and run on a trail, soft surface. Those are the types of things I'm looking to do in the winter.
Trails are so much fun in the wintertime. I love running. The trails are just beautiful, as long as you don't hit the ice. Get some trail shoes. It's handy. Oh,
yeah. I don't run too much on the trail because it's just so much easier to jump on a treadmill since I have a treadmill in my house.
I'm such a group runner that, you know, it's like, well, let's... I just enjoy the side-to-side movement. I enjoy, you know, I just enjoy it as a trade-off from the roads and pounding on the roads.
Yeah. So. November, December, from a swimming standpoint, I continue to swim. Swimming is such a technique-driven sport. You really can't afford to get away from it for an extended period of time. So I'll continue to swim. Usually I just try to change my focus because usually by the end of August, I'm pretty burnt out on swimming. A lot of, like the previous year, that's when I started training for the 400 IMs.
Mm-hmm.
When I did the hour-long swim, 400 IMs.
When's that coming up? 8x4.
Yeah.
Oof.
So this became that time where I got to work on that. This year, I'm kind of working on just freestyle technique. I don't swim very hard. I don't swim very fast for the most part. And then in January, my swimming will change to speed work for a swim meet. Usually the beginning of March, we do the Wildcat Master Swim Meet in Lexington. My training, instead of being distance, endurance focused in the early part of the year, it's more speed focused. Mm-hmm. Allows me to work on pure speed, which ends up being handy when I get later into more distance stuff, because the speed does translate into distance later on. Really allows me to vary up my swim training throughout the year. That October, November, December is technique. I do all the different strokes, just have some fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
January, February, I'm looking at speed work to get ready to race in a swim meet. This year, my running in that January, February time frame, because this is when I start thinking about kind of my base training. I need to build up some base fitness for race season over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
In running, the last couple of years, I've done a lot of real fast speed work early in the year. This year, I'm probably going to change that up. I'm probably going to do some more tempo stuff, which means that in theory, about March, I'd be ready for a half marathon, but you will probably never see me in a half marathon.
I was going to say, what? Do what?
I will be in great shape for the Derby marathon this year by that time.
Yeah, you don't.
But I won't do anything like that.
You won't do that.
No, I won't do that. But that's the type of work I'll be doing.
If you did that, I'd have to be there because I wasn't going to do that one. But I might have to if you're going to do it.
I won't, but I will do a lot of half training, probably a little bit faster. Sub 10K pace, but right around half pace, maybe a little faster than half pace. Do some work in that range. Because it's been a while since I've done work in that range. Because I'm a short course racer. A lot of my work's in that 5, 10K range.
Yeah.
So this year I was going to do some more of that half distance, maybe marathon pace work early in the season. Instead of the really high pace speed.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I transfer into the later stages of kind of my base training, that March, April, May, we'll definitely be doing a lot of half work in there. And as I get into closer to the summer, probably April, is when I'll start thinking about like 5K work. So April, May will be 5K work.
Okay.
And then June, July, which is kind of my build up, is when I'll do my 10K work. My very race specific. By the time June comes around, I'm ready to do race specific stuff. About January, February, that's when my bike will start picking up more and more.
Mm-hmm.
This year, my focus will probably be early season will be on cadence. We have a lot of hills around here.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that my average cadence has dropped over the last few years, where I used to try to ride in above 90. That's coming down to about like 89, 88. I would like to get that back up to where it's higher.
And you think it's from the hills?
Yeah, because a lot of times when you're pedaling up a hill, you're not running high RPMs.
Yeah.
So my average RPMs have just kind of slowly gone downhill. And I've seen it in races where now when I'm racing, I'll average like 91, 92, 90 RPMs in a race where I used to average about 96. It's just because you got to train it like everything else. And I haven't trained it. It begins to fall back. And a lot of it's because of the hills, because you go up hills at 60, 70, 80 RPMs.
Right.
You're not going 90-plus RPMs up a hill. That just means when I get to the top, I need to really be thinking about higher RPMs. That'll be my focus this year on base. Like I said, every year can be a little different. I'll obviously be doing a lot of speed work in the early season with biking, probably some tempo work. I basically work a lot of the different energy systems. So your VO2 max, I'll work my neuro, I'll probably do some tempo work.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I just avoid race pace work and work everything around it leading up into the June when
until
I make that
closer
transition. And usually it's about June. That's when I make my transition in every sport to I'm going to do race-specific work. In June, July, August is all race-specific work to get ready for that peak where I'm doing most of my primary workouts are going to be race-paced work and creating endurance at those paces. 10K pace work, 1.5K on a swim type
mm-hmm.
work. So a lot of maybe hundreds, 200s on a very short interval of rest and try to maintain paces for longer periods of time. Biking will be a lot of 10, 15, 20 minute sets at
gotcha.
Race pace efforts, which is a little bit easier to do because I have a power meter.
Yeah.
I'm out there doing the race pace work and getting myself ready for racing. Usually I don't start racing until about June, maybe late April or May. Sometimes I race in May. There's also a local race in April that I might do depending on the weather. We haven't had good weather, so I haven't raced it in a few years.
Yeah. Which one is that?
That's the Shelbyville series.
Oh, yeah.
There's usually some May races, but May is awfully cold to go do open water swimming.
Yeah.
It's very much a crapshoot. I don't like cold
you
weather.
You hate cold water.
I hate cold water. But I might race in May. The May-June races, I'll line those up. And those are just to get me ready for the July and August-September races. It's mostly about just making sure my pacing seems okay. Seeing, can I do these paces? What does my paces need to be? Is how's the training working so I can make adjustments for that sharpening step, which is those final 2 months. Because a big key of what I try to do is every month or two, I got to change up my stimulus. I need to do a different speed. I need to do something else to create adaptations.
Mm-hmm.
So once my body adapts to them, it doesn't do me any good to do those workouts anymore. I got to move to something else.
Yeah.
That's why I don't do much race pace work until those 2 months before the race. That allows me to do the work, make the adaptations for the race, and then I'm done. Now I'm going and doing something else. And the big reason I kind of wanted to go through this is that, okay, this is what a season should look like for most athletes. You shouldn't have race after race after race, and I'm going to be peaking for this race. I'm going to peak for 3 races throughout the year. That's not what you want to do as an age group. That's a good way to burn out. That's a good way to get injured.
Yeah.
What I'm looking at is like, okay, this is how I go about scheduling my year. I take time down at the end of the year. I'm taking like 2 or 3 months where I'm not working all that hard.
Yeah.
Mostly it's just about maintenance and just basic skill development. I go out mountain bike to work on cornering. I might be working on cadence type work.
I've had a blast with Masters just figuring out, it's taking some time just to learn how to swim properly again.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just all the little tweaks. It's like I've never been that, I'm not that fast, but I'm not that slow either. And just making those small adjustments and having the time to do it.
Yeah.
I love swimming 4 times a week. It's great.
Most of my training in the off season is technique oriented. And it's not about going out there and crushing these long workouts. It's very much, for 3 or 4 months of the year, I do very little that takes more than an hour. I usually swim for about an hour, and my bike's indoor, 45 minutes to an hour. If I go outside, I might get up over to an hour and a half in the winter.
Yeah.
Just because I'm outside and riding, depending on how nice the weather
2 hours
is.
On a trainer? Shoot me now.
No, I don't spend any time. I don't spend more than an hour on a trainer.
Yeah.
And I don't, my longest runs this time of the year, 30, 40 minutes. I don't spend a lot of time training for the 3 or 4 months in the wintertime. I just don't. I stay active. I maintain my routine.
Yeah.
Mostly so that I don't get out of the habit. Because most of your development in a sport like triathlon is very much of consistency. If you can consistently do it, you're going to get better. And if you're mm-hmm. focused on getting better, you're going to get even more better quicker.
Yeah.
But that's what it's all about. And that's kind of what I wanted to kind of talk about today was, hey, this is, we talk about what a season should look like, but what does it really mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I wanted to kind of talk about what I did is like, okay, this is what I'm doing throughout the year. I don't do a ton of hard work. I'll do some in the spring, early summer. It gets really hard as I get closer to racing. And then I race. And then for the next 4 or 5 months, it's not hard. And base season is not hard.
It's very different than, my previous years. This year is going to be very different than anything I've ever done before. Because, I raced and raced and raced and raced. I mean, it was running races,
mm-hmm.
but you know, I'm at 53, like, done.
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't, there's no way. I've done it for 12 years. I've, you know, I've
you eventually
done 38, 39 half marathons, 8 full marathons. Yeah, I'm tired.
You burn out, you get tired, you get worn out. There's a lot of things that will begin to wear on you. It becomes more of a grind and less of a fun thing.
Yep.
If you can disengage for a while, you can find that fun again.
And that's, I mean, that's been happening now that I've, you know, I'm signed up for one half marathon next year, and that's it. And, you know, I'm this one I'm actually pacing. The rest of them I've given up pacing. I'm giving that to everybody else, and I'm going to lead cycle instead, which sounds so much more fun. It's like, I can do that. So I can still be involved. I can still have all the social part of it that I like so much. You know, you're very much a solitary athlete. I am not. I need my group. I need my friends. I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning so I can go see people.
Yeah.
And get, you know, and I do like to work out. I feel better, you know, when I do it. But a lot of it, the reason to get there is because, oh, so-and-so is going to be there. Okay, so I'll get out of bed.
Yeah.
You know, just because the way my schedule is, I've got to do it at 5 o'clock in the morning or it's not going to get done.
Well, it always becomes crazy, too, because people always ask, well, what's your next race? I'm like, I don't know. It'll probably be in June.
Yeah.
I'll find some races then. I
haven't figured it out yet.
No, and I won't figure it out until later in the year because I know what my season's going to look like. I know that I'm going to choose some race in August for my peak.
And see what I would do. You know, in December, that's when all the races go on discount. It's like, you know, I get Christmas bonus and I would sign up for,
yeah,
I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 9 races all in the month of December or January. I mean, I'd have, and a lot of them be back to back. I mean, I'd be doing half marathons every other weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy.
And I generally don't sign up until races until late. And I just don't need to. I know exactly where I'm going to be, when I'm going to be at peak fitness. I know when that race is going to be. I just have to find a race to fill that time slot. Then you just kind of work backwards. It's really not that hard. And I don't have to know what my next race is. I don't have to know what my next peak race is and all that stuff.
So what about folks like me that like will still do 5Ks or, you know, other races?
Crazy. My race season, I race for about 4 months of the year. If you're a runner, maybe you do a couple more months. Runner, in theory, could have a peak in the fall and the spring if they really wanted to do it consistently and have a race season both of those times. I just think you'd burn out. I think you should pick one, stick to it. And the other time when it's nice in the spring, if you're going to be a fall racer, race in the fall. Spring is more about having fun. Maybe go out and do some races in the spring just because they're kind of grouped
just
there.
Because, I mean, you know, just I mean, there's plenty of races I've done that it's just, hey, everybody's going. You know,
keep them shorter. Don't go out and do the marathons.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm kind of done with marathons, I think, at this point.
Yeah, 5Ks and 10Ks. Go out and run those. Those are going to be better for you anyway, because most endurance runners generally run slow all the time anyway. Go out and run fast. Go out and run fast.
That's hard.
Yeah.
That's I'd rather go out for a lot longer, for longer and slower than short fast. Short fast is tough.
Yeah, but that's how you get better. And the off season's a great time to do that. If I'm going to be, let's say my spring is going to be my peak as a runner. So that means all winter I'm doing a bunch of race pace stuff, either half pace or full pace, which is not slow, but I mean, it's not fast. So spring, let's do 5Ks and 10Ks. Let's work my other parts of my running. Let's go out and do those other things because that's where you're going to get changes that are going to adjust over here. If I do the same thing all the time, I'm not getting any better.
Yeah.
You got to change what you do to create adaptations.
So I've changed to triathlon. Woohoo! Well, it's all very interesting. We'll see what the year pans out. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. If anybody has any questions, give us a holler. Like us on iTunes and, what is it, Google Play? Is that where we get rated?
Google Podcast.
Google Podcast.
Yeah.
So you can sign us up there.
Rate us on iTunes. Sign up. Google doesn't have a rating system.
They don't.
But sign up. Subscribe.
Sign up. Subscribe. All those good things.
Helps us out.
Yeah. If you have any questions that you want us to discuss, shoot us an email. Love to hear from you. Have a great evening.